It's a little ambitious. We'll see if this works. Hopefully, in terms of our Ian material, we'll try to see if we can get Misakim in the next 3 days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We may have a little bit of overflow on Thursday because Shani have told us is shorter than Rishon have told us, to put it that way. But we'll see. And so in terms of the Bakias material, we'll try to do it between now and next Sunday. We'll see how far we get today. But between now and next Sunday. That's the goal. We'll see if it's too ambitious. I think if we're focused, we can pull it off. And then we'll try to have our Rabbah B'chinas the following week, hopefully. Again, if it ends up being a day over, it won't be the world, but that's, I think, what we'll aim for. And so in terms of today, the B'chias, in terms of the B'chias Gemaras, Chazar on their own, but in terms of the topics that we spoke about, so we're in the middle of a topic last week, so we'll try to finish that topic. And then once we finish that, we'll try to talk about the topic again from the beginning. We'll see if it gets done today or next week, but between today and next week, we should hopefully be able to cover it. So essentially, what we started talking about last week, which is a particularly fascinating topic, happened to tie in with the parsha of that week, which parsha is Vayera. We started to talk about the question of when it's mutter to lie, or when it comes up in our Gemara in the Anpuria Sugya, which is here at the bottom of Chav Gimel Amid Beis, and the top of Chav Dalet Amid Aleph. And essentially, the Gemara here touches upon the fact that there are times where a person could be a Talmud Chacham and he could still be Mishanem min ha-emes. He could say something which isn't, strictly speaking, true. And we started to try to understand, how does that operate? And before dealing with this Gemara itself, we backed up to talk about other Gemaras that address this issue. In terms of the most famous example, that being the example of Shalom. The Gemara says in Masachas Yevamos that it is Mutter Lashanos Bifnei HaShalom. And how to translate that itself, we have to figure out, does Lashanos mean to lie, or does it mean something a little softer than that? Does it mean to fudge the truth, to change the truth? And the issue is, first of all, where does that come from and what does it mean? So the Gemara had three stages of derivation. One is that it's mutter l'shanos, we see that from Parshas Vayechi, that the brothers tell Yosef that Yaakov had instructed that they should forgive him, or the way around, he should forgive them, and that was his deathbed wish. And even though it seemed not to be 100% accurate, some discussion about, you know, was there a justifiable inference perhaps, but it doesn't seem to be that it actually took place that way. So you could think, it's terrible, it's gefarlich, they're liars. So says the Gemara, no, mutter l'shanos b'fnei Hashem, it's permissible. That's the opinion of Rav Nassim in the Gemara and Yavamis. The next opinion is Rabbi Loi. Rabbi Loi goes further, and he says, not mutter, it's a mitzvah. Mutter suggests that it's an option. You could do it, you could not do it. So we have to say that's not the case, but it's a mitzvah. And he brought the pasuk regarding David HaMelech, that when Shmuel was given the shlichus, that he should anoint David HaMelech, and he was hesitant to do this. He thought that Shaul would get very upset and would kill him. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'll give you a plan how to deal with it. You will take an animal with you, it will create the impression that you are bringing a korban, and that will avoid a confrontation with Shaul. So there, it's not simply that we justify it after the fact, that we say, all right, he did it, it's mutter, but this was part of how HaKadosh Baruch Hu set it up. He said, this is the way you do it. So apparently it's not just mutter, but it's a mitzvah. And the question was asked, as I think Jonathan asked last week, you could ask based on the pasuk, that it seems like he's not just afraid of machlokas, it seems like he's afraid of mavis. And he says, v'shama shol v'harigani, shol's going to kill me. So if it's a bikoach nefesh situation, so then he could do most things. So it's not necessarily a raya that we will allow certain things for shalom. So there's a discussion about that. Some suggest that this was set up dafka this way in order to convey this lesson. Some point to the fact that there is a principle of shluchei mitzvah ein nizokim, We mentioned this discussion about this in the Sefer Arach Meisharim, but the Rishon already touched upon this issue, that even though we're not sure what the parameters are, this idea that a person is protected when he's on a shlichus for a mitzvah, but it's safe to guess that in this case, you're given a specific mission for you, this one time in history. Presumably, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to protect you physically. So even if Shmuel didn't appreciate that at the time, physically he was going to be protected. So what was the issue? The issue was machlokas, because emotions are still going to be there, and God's way is not to interfere with emotions, so it's still going to be a machlokas. So how do we avoid that? So God says, here's the plan. Do it this way. Mutal l'shanas ifnei hashal. And then the Gemara, sorry?
In some context,
so that is smicha nes, but it's not smicha nes.
They're just saying, oh, because shulchan is man is okay, we're relying on a miracle.
Is that relying on a miracle? That here, Kodesh Baruch Hu says, this is the, I mean, general, so the Gemara says that there are exceptions, or that there are limitations, that if it's a situation where shchia chazeka, that if something specifically dangerous. So here, it's hard to say that it's smicha nes, because, again, the mission is so specific. It's one thing if you decide you're going to go through the hurricane to get to Mincha, and it's clearly dangerous, so you could say you're being so mechal anes. We know that, okay, the normal din of going to Davin doesn't involve hurricanes. But here, this is a one-time mission that's given to you. David Tribish, do this. Kodesh Baruch Hu comes to you in the Nevuah and says, here's what you're supposed to do. So presumably, he's saying that you have the Hagana of the Mitzvah in this case. So that's in terms of physical protection, but in terms of the emotional issues that are going to come out of it, so that's not God's way to interfere. So he said, that's why we need a plan. Hi.
What about the Shvatim when they came to Yaakov about Yosef?
I mean, so they should be excused for what they did.
I know there are a lot of different opinions about what they said, what they didn't say, whether they actually... It was definitely... So
you could be asking the question from a couple angles.
They misled him, definitely. But was that, like, a viable way of going about it? They were trying to kind of not have him get angry at them.
Right. Part of the problem is, and we'll get to this a little bit, that if you allow that, then you essentially allow any offense. Right? Yeah. Anybody can commit any crime and then say afterwards, okay, I've had to lie because otherwise I'll get in trouble. And Motu Lashanas. So presumably, we don't mean that. Presumably, we're talking about a situation, and we'll see it's going to emerge in some of the sources a little bit more specifically after we look at things a little bit more. But presumably, it's built into the idea that you can't mistreat people to begin with, that you're not allowed to excuse yourself from the consequences of that mistreatment by claiming shalom when you have to pay the price. So you have to figure out exactly where that extends to and where it doesn't. I think there's some more complex scenarios. But in the case of, so in general, you certainly couldn't say from, as a blanket idea that one has the right to excuse oneself in such context. Certainly if it was ever formalized, because we'll come back to it in a second, but if it was a Beis Din context or something like that, so then it's not clear there is any such heter anyway. And again, we'll see some more nuances in this issue. But in the case of the specific case of the Shvatim, so even if you want to get them off the hook for lying, which is questionable, it wouldn't matter because that's not their ikar offense. You know, their ikar offense is the Mechiras Yosef to begin with. So it's kind of a Kim Lev the Rabbi Meh on this point, because it doesn't really matter whether or not they were also liable for lying. It's probably the least bad thing they did in that context. But it's presumably... Sorry?
No one defends them.
It's because it's not really relevant. You know, it's kind of subsumed in the whole issue that the main crime is Mechiras Yosef. And this is a small detail of it. So it's kind of somewhat of a Kimberly Durabine in the whole issue. This is not what we pay attention to. So now, after it's all over, and now everybody's reconciled again, and it's a question of now just whether they should be continuing Breakers afterwards. So that's where apparently they're justified in saying that there was an instruction to forgive them. But we'll see also, we'll look at a little bit more of this, that there are some other nuances which are probably relevant to that question. In any event, the third case is the one from Parshas Vayera we read last week, that Sarah says when she hears she's going to have a child, she says, how could that be, right, that my husband is so old? And one pasuk later, Kodesh Baruch Hu relates that episode to Avraham, and it comes out differently. It comes out as if she had said that we're old, or he's old, or I'm old, excuse me, something that softens the blow against Avraham. So apparently, Kadosh Baruch Hu also is Mashana in order to keep the Shalom Bein Ish L'Ishto. So the question comes out from all of those that what is the nature of this heter? If we assume that it's generally usher to lie, which is a safe assumption, it's a good approach to start with. The pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim, Midvar Sheker Tircha. So then why should it ever be mutter? Is it not so absolute? So we mentioned that there is a range of opinions as to what the pasuk actually means, both in terms of strength and in terms of context. In terms of strength, so terchak is an unusual phrase. Hi.
Perhaps we could say that, I mean, I think the Rishonim Tzlaim suggests that the reason the lashon terchak is not an absolute iser. It's only
so that correct. So that might be what it's getting at. That's why we're mentioning it. That maybe it suggests some variability in the iser. There is a range of interpretations in terms of the severity. That on the one hand, you have to say for Achinuch, who says that the lashon of terchak is meant to convey rove tiuvo. It's so disgusting. It's such a terrible thing that the Torah doesn't just say. You know, the Gemara tells us that normally you have a prohibition. There are four lashonos of iser the Torah uses. Right, Hishamar, Pen, Lav, and Al. There are four different words the Torah uses to prohibit something. So what's with Tirchak? What does that do for us? So the Sefer HaChinuch says that it means that it's just so disgusting, we have to take a greater opprobrium. We have to say, don't even come close. And others seem to interpret it in a different direction. That it means try to avoid. And we mentioned how this has been invoked in different contexts. I think we told a story last week about the Rugachev or whoever it was of a similar bent who signed the Haskam at the very bottom of the page because of Midvar Sheker Tirchak. So the word Tirchak has been applied in different contexts, what exactly it's meant to convey. And Aaron's point is well taken, that maybe it does suggest that there is a time of heter, so it's a less than absolute prohibition, as we'll see. But it's also a question, what is the context? And we paralleled it a little bit to American law, that in American law, if I say the sky is green, so I'm not committing any crime. I can't go to jail for that. What type of lying can I go to jail for? I can lie. I can go to jail if I lie under oath. It's called perjury. So a formal context in which there is an oath. Or I can go to jail if I lie in such a way that it causes you to lose money. That's fraud. So both are valid theories for Midvar Sheker Tirchak, that there are those who maintain that if I say the sky is green, so I'm not in violation of Midvar Sheker Tirchak. I'm in violation, maybe I could say it's parallel to perjury, because the Gemara in the middle of Masechet Shavuos has a number of drashos on the pasuk Midvar Sheker Tirchak, and they're all in a Bezdin context, leading some to come to that conclusion, that it's a formal setting, then there is such a prohibition. And also in terms of fraud, so the Sefer Yireim most prominently maintains that essentially sheker is a ben adam l'chaveiro. It's not an automatic iser on any time you say something non-factual. And therefore, if I hurt someone through my lying, if I defraud them, if I cause them tzaras because I'm telling them something non-true, so that's where I am violating this iser. But as Rav Yosef Epstein fills in his Sefer, one of his svarim on the ben adam l'chaveiro, that if it's a constructive lie, it's actually going to help people be happier, so then it's possibly not even covered by an iser at all. Now, we should emphasize that there are other aspects which encourage us to tell the truth, of course, and that the Pesukim and Tanakh in general emphasize the terribleness of a Dover Shkarim, and we believe that a Chosamto Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu Emesu. So we certainly would discourage somebody from randomly saying the sky is green or from making up stories for no reason, even if it's not technically Midvar Sheker Tirchak. But in the case of Shalom, so maybe there is a big reason. So that's part of what is the background in terms of trying to understand how exactly this heter works. Anyone want to comment on
that? Like a joke or something, where you say something which is clearly not true for the means of humor.
So it's a good question. Do you actually intend to deceive, or do you... So it depends what you mean by saying it not true. Are you trying to actually convey a non-truth, or are you just making a joke where within the context of the sentence it's going to come clear that it's... So then presumably that's mutter, and then if it's for a positive purpose, you're trying to bring simcha to the other guy, so then that's probably related to some type of shalom, although we'll see it also probably depends on how you understand the lamdus here a little bit. So you could say there are essentially two ways to look at this. You could say that emes and shalom are in a values clash, that you have a conflict between the value of emes and the value of shalom, and you could argue that they are the two key values of Judaism, based on the pasuk in Zechariah, the pasuk that talks about the Taneisim. It says that the Taneisim will ultimately be l'sasin l'semcha, and the pasuk ends off v'ha'emes v'ha'shalom me'havu, and truth and peace are beloved. So one could read that pasuk as saying these are our two main values in life. We want to stick to truth and we want to stick to peace. So what happens if you can't do both? If there's a conflict, they're mutually exclusive, you're going to have to pick one or the other. But if you're going to tell the truth, you're going to start a fight. And if you're going to try to keep the peace, you're going to have to say something not true. So then one could say, well, if they're equal, if it's really 50-50, so then I should have the right to choose whichever one I want to choose, whichever one makes sense to me, whichever one seems a responsible decision right now. So that would probably be the first opinion in the Gemara. It says mutter l'shanos, which implies it's also mutter not to be mishana, that it's an option. So you could say if they're two equal issues, then it's mutter to go either way. They're both viable options. Alternatively, if you take the second opinion in the Gemara, that you say mitzvah l'shanos, that it's not an option, but you have to pick shalom, so you could say that one of two ways. You could say the same thing we just said, but tweak it a little bit. That essentially it's a values conflict, but they're not equal. But yes, it's emes versus shalom, but it's not 50-50, so therefore you have less discretion in picking one over the other. Or you could say that it's not even a values clash, because these are not two head-to-head isurim. On the one hand, you have the mitzvah of shalom. What's the mitzvah of shalom is a fair question, but there are a lot of candidates. So for now, we'll just take it for given that there are many candidates. There is for sure a mitzvah of shalom. And what's it up against? The isur of sheker? Maybe not. Maybe this is not a case where midvar sheker tirchak applies. So then that's the question. Is it a values clash or is it not even a values clash? The values clash, we'll have to figure out what should win. And we mentioned there are articles, the Convention of Stepansky, the editor of Mizrach, has an article about this, about what's historically taken as best. The Mishnah in Perkei Avos refers to both of them as pillars of the world. Maim Shikin, a sefer in Perkei Avos, talks about that a little bit. I think we mentioned the Chassidus Shavuot that says that Shalom is the name of God. The Gemara says in Shabbos and Daf Yud that Shalom is Hashem Hashem. So therefore, even though we also call Emes the seal of God, Chosamo Shel Kadosh Baruch Hu, that's a big deal, but Shalom is a bigger deal because the name is more connected than the seal. The seal is a representation. The name actually represents the essence. If you have a conflict between the name and the seal, so then the name should win. So that's a big discussion, and it probably relates to the question of whether we say mutter or mitzvah l'shanos with nashal. So that brought it back to us. That's what brought us back to our Gemara, the question of how do we paskin on that issue? Do we say that it's mutter, or do we say that it's a mitzvah? So some of the discussion centers around our Gemara and Bav Metziah, Chav Gimel Beis and Chav Dalet and Aleph, because the Gemara has these three cases where a Talmud Chacham can be Mishana and he will still maintain his reputation as an honest person. And the relevance to our Gemara and Bav Metziah was we were just establishing this week after a 2-3 blot of talking about Simanim and the like, and that we're only obligated to return something if there's a Simon. Maybe we're only allowed to return something if there's a Simon because of the responsibility of the Shomer Aveda. But then we saw all of a sudden it made a difference that there could be a situation where you have to return something that doesn't have a sin. The Gemara talks about the situation of an anpurya, which apparently is some type of a new kli, which is recognizable, the question of whether it's recognizable or not, And apparently you could have a situation where something could be recognized and not have a simon, and you'd have to return it. So what kind of situation is that? You have an honest man, a Talmud Chacham, he comes to you and he says, let me see it. Oh, I recognize it, it's mine. You're allowed to trust him. If that's his reputation, that he's an honest man, you can trust him. So the Gemara says there are some cases where this Talmud Chacham might choose to deviate from the truth, and we still trust him. Hi.
How can he recognize it? I mean, I understand if things are, I guess they were mass-produced then, so they wouldn't be exactly the same, but objects that are brand new and have no distinguishing simanim that differentiate between them, like how can someone say, okay, this is mine and...
Yeah, it's a fair question. That seems to be the whole premise of the discussion of Gemara, whether or not such a thing exists. That's how the Gemara gets into the conversation. But I think also your point about mass production is probably relevant, that there are enough unique factors which probably are no different than a siman. You know, so the difference then is between a siman and recognizing it would be a siman is something that I can provide to you that you believe me that I own it. While here, the tfiyazai means I can't put my finger on anything, I can't describe anything to you that will associate with me, but from my own knowledge, it's recognizable enough. So essentially, it would seem that it's the same threshold as a siman. It's just the difference between a siman and tfiyasayin is that I have to prove to you that I recognize it, and tfiyasayin means I don't have to prove to you that I recognize it, that you'll trust me that I say that I recognize it, that it's associated with me. And you're right, that in a modern era where everything comes off the assembly line, looking the exact same, so it would probably have to have a higher threshold, but it's still not impossible. So you have my iPhone, it's scuffed in the corner, and it has a faded color, and it has this wallpaper on it, so I couldn't remember that in order to give you a siman, but then you show it to me, and I recognize it, oh, Taka, that's mine. So the average person you can't believe, but if it's a Talmud Chacham speaking, so then you can trust them. Hi.
How do they define Talmud Chacham?
So here, Talmud Chacham seems to be less about his knowledge, but more about his reputation for honesty, which itself is a Bumasar Haskell, that we see that apparently it's Havaha, that the assumption is that somebody who's devoted to Talmud Torah is devoted to truth, or Havaha, that can't succeed in learning without being committed to truth. The Rashid of Karen Biavna just will mention Agava's point, that the Gemara says, the Gemara talks about the Rav Nachman HaMsuni, who the Gemara Pesachim, that he had a method by which he darshaned every S in the Torah. Every time the Torah uses the word S, he figured out what it's meant to represent, what the intention of the word S is. And apparently the theory was that it comes to include something which is secondary to something else. So X, S, Y, at Y, so it means that the Y is also inclusive of something that is secondary to it. So he had this policy, he explained all the S in the Torah, until he got to S Hashem Lokechem Tira, that you have to have Mora Shamayim, so then what is the S coming to include that's together with Shamayim? So it can't be anything. He doesn't know what the answer is, he says. So he abandoned it. He said that I had a theory what S means, but now I see that it's wrong because I can't figure out how to interpret this pasuk. So I'm going to abandon my theory, and that's where the expression comes from. The Gemara says, "Kishem shezachisi al adrisha, kach ezka al aprisha." And it's the same way. I get sechus. I get schar. For having made all these drashos, I'll get equal schar for having abandoned it. Apparently, Rabbi Shua Falk agreed to get equal schar for both because he wrote two commentaries on the Drisha and the Prisha. So they agreed that they are both the equivalent stature. He also wrote the Sma, who we refer to often in the Hilchos of Tzivya Veda, and other things. So this statement, he says, I'm going to give up this vort, and I will get the same schos as if I kept darshan. So then Rabbi Akiva told him the answer. So Rabbi Akiva said that Es Hashem Elokeichem Tira L'Rabos Tamidei Chachamim, as Menachem said, that it shows you that Tamidei Chachamim you also have to have Mora for. So Rav Goldberg for sure can be having used to ask, what's Pshat? So here you have Nachmanim Suni. He was a professional S darshaner. This was his life's work, darshaning S. And he couldn't figure out this pasuk. And all of a sudden, Rabbi Akiva saunters in and he figures out the drasha that the professional couldn't figure out. What's Pshat? What's the difference between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Nachman? So Rabbi Akiva said that Rabbi Akiva, he saw Rabbi Nachman. He saw that Talmid Chacham was so devoted to Emes that he could spend his life's work on a certain theory. But if he gets a hint that it's not going to make sense, if he gets a hint that it's not actual truth, it doesn't actually hold up, he's ready to abandon the whole thing. So says Rabbi Akiva, now I understand. Esler Rabbos Talmidei Chachamim. The Talmidei Chachamim are so devoted to Emes that they are worthy of Mora together with God's Mora. The source of all truth shares his Mora with the Talmidei Chachamim who are dedicated to that truth. So in any event, so that's the Midah of a Talmid Chacham, apparently, that they are devoted to truth. So one might think, okay, so they have to be brutally honest, so to speak. Somebody once told me a line that people who are brutally honest are often more interested in the brutality than the honesty. So you might think they have to be brutally honest. They have to say everything that's on their mind, regardless of the consequences. So the Gemara tells us here, no, it's not true, that there are situations where even the Talmid Chacham, who devotes his whole life to truth, can say something which is not true, and we're not going to hold it against him. It's not going to take away from his status. So, yeah, hi.
Isn't there the concept by a wedding to tell the chassan that he made a...
Yeah, so we'll have to get to that. We'll get to that in a second, see how that fits in. So that's another important marker. But for now, the Gemara mentions these three. So the Gemara says that on the one hand, we have Masechta, which at first blush seems to be about modesty. That you want to play down how much you know so that you shouldn't take too much cover from people. Second example is Pariah, which probably refers to marital intimacy. We mentioned the Maharsha, who interprets it as Purim, Chayavin Shul Musume B'Pariah, but literally the word normally is translated as bed. And one probably could guess that it refers to all such things that are not anybody's business. That if somebody asks you a question and it's none of your business, so then presumably you're not obligated to, answer. And there's a whole discussion about how to interpret that. I often wondered, for example, if somebody asks somebody, hey, did you pass the test? That's not any of their business. But if you're going to say, listen, I don't want to tell you, so then you're essentially saying that you didn't, and you have the right to keep that information confidential because it's not their business. So presumably in such a situation, a person is not mechuyev to answer honestly. And if somebody asks you a question, that's not nogea to them, and it's none of their business. So it's a reasonable inference, you could argue also, but it's a reasonable inference that there is a heter to be mashana in such a situation. And they mentioned that the svarim such as Titan and Asliako, which I think you were able to locate right away, have extensive tshuvas about this, about whether there is a heter for busha to lie. So one could perhaps connect it to this, that this is a broad category, that somebody asks me something that's none of your business, so then you should be able to say what you need to say. Hi.
Isn't that Pasha of the Gemara? Because in the Pariah case, the Gemara is not suggesting that you say, don't answer, this guy's not his business. The Gemara suggests that you lie.
Right. So the question is, how do we make this into a category? Does it mean very specifically marital relationship? Or is it a way of, is a shortening?
Right. Either way, it says, correct. No, I think it's not your business.
Correct. In this case, in the case of Pariah, I think that is explicit. So our question is just, can we make that into a broader category? Which we probably can. And you could distinguish, you could say, listen, when it comes to Pariah, if it means the marital relationship, so there is an obligation that's needed. So you might say that you have extra reasons to hold back, right? But maybe in other areas where you don't have the tznius component, maybe we should be disinclined to. So I don't know if it's a slam dunk to say that there's a category here, but it does seem to be the basis of such a category. And then the third was Ushkiza, which presumably involves not endangering your host. If somebody is very gracious to you and provides you with great meals and the like, so they'd rather not have everyone know that they are able to do that because it's going to put them under siege. So you're allowed to misrepresent that as well. So that was what our Gemara told us. So the Rishonim on this Gemara, the Rush and the Rif and others ask that what's missing from the list? Shalom. Shalom is a big deal, so we see that that for sure is a situation where there is a heter to be Mishana. So why are the Rishonim not mentioning it? Or why is the Gemara not mentioning it, rather? Why does the Gemara not make this as part of the list? So we saw a couple of approaches. One approach is that this is the list. Tosfos suggests like that. That everything on this list is a subset of Shalom. And that leads us to reinterpret the Maseches idea a little bit, that it's not just about modesty, but it's about, you want to stay out of a fight. We mentioned the story from Reb Chaim, that Reb Chaim was in the habit of invoking such a ploy, that if you didn't want to get into a fight with somebody, he'd say, listen, I'm not holding in that Gemara, I didn't learn it, I can't talk to you about it. And it wasn't necessarily true, but it was his way of avoiding a machlokas. So it could be that the whole thing is about Shalom. All of these are examples. You don't want people to get into a fight when they come to your host's house and he's not interested in serving them. All these situations, you're trying to avoid machlokas, these might just be subsets. That's how Tosfos seems to see it. But the other Rishonim, such as the Rashi and the Rif, say that the reason Shalom is not listed here is because Shalom is a mitzvah. You have an obligation to make Shalom. So why would I need the Gemara to tell me that if I fulfill my key responsibility, it's not going to hurt my reputation? Of course it's not. That's a chiyuv. The ones in the Gemara here, these are optional. So the Gemara is saying there are certain discretionary areas where a person may decide to be Mishana, and that's acceptable. It will not make him any less worthy of getting his property returned to him. And other cases are actually a chiv. It's actually interesting, you know, we'll talk in a minute about some of the limitations on this idea, but you could also kind of work backwards. And part of what you see here is that these cases are not cases that would ever interfere with his honesty about his own property. So that if he somehow makes a cheshbon that it's b'nei ha-shalom that he should get the property back, even if it's not his, or something like that. So that clearly has exceeded the parameters, because the whole thrust of this Gemara is that this does not interfere with this area, that they are essentially compartmentalized areas, that whatever he would say in this area would not cast suspicion on whether or not the property is actually his. So it's loosely parallel, but not the same, for a very major reason, that sometimes we find in the Gemara that there are gradations of chashuv. The person is suspected of violating a certain avera, so he's not always suspected of violating worse averas. So here we compartmentalize, but here again it's a very bad parallel, because this is not an avera, this is appropriate, he's doing it for good reasons, so chashuv isn't the right word. But the point is, you see that it's compartmentalized, that whatever lack of accuracy he has in this area is not assumed to spill over in the area of him identifying property, whether it's his or not. If he tells you it's his, you can still assume that he's being completely straight with you, and that the fact that he wasn't straight about who gave him dinner last night or about how many mesechtas he's learned doesn't affect it, it's not connected. So that's how some of the Rishonim say. So those Rishonim who say like that, they seem to be saying that it's a mitzvah l'shanah sepnei ha-shalom, that's not optional, and these ones are discretionary. The Rambam sounds less like this. The Rambam talks about this in Hilchos Deis when he talks about how a Talmid Chacham behaves. And he also talks about this in Hilchos Metziah V'Aveda, because it's relevant here. And in both cases, it doesn't sound like he's so thrilled about it. And he has the language of l'hosif v'ligroa. So it's not that he doesn't say l'shaker, just like the Gemara doesn't say l'shaker, but he doesn't even say l'shanos. So to add and to take away. He's very, very hesitant in how far he wants to go. So it seems like, first of all, the Rambam holds mutter rather than mitzvah. And it could be that this is the issue, that maybe the Rambam sees as a value clash here. That on the one hand, you have emes, and on the other hand, you have shalom. So if you have to, if you really have to, so then you can suspend emes for shalom. But he seems to think that it really is an issue, it's really a trade-off. While other Rishonim who say it's a mitzvah, don't even think twice, they're essentially not seeing an issur of sheker here, and therefore there isn't even what to talk about. Why would I think that there is such an issue? It's for sure mutter, I wouldn't even have to discuss it in Bav Metziah, because it's not even on my radar screen as potential sheker. So a related issue, which the Rambam already alluded to, in terms of this question of whether it's a values clash or whether it's just a hutra, is once you say you're going to be Mishana, so we mentioned before that it's a question how to translate the word. Should we translate it as lying, or should we say no? If Gemara wanted to say you could lie, you would say l'shaker. But l'shanos is maybe an intentionally chosen softer word. So that's a fair question too. Should we say that you can actually lie, black on white, say something is completely false, up is down, left is right? Or should we say, no, you can only leave out some facts, you can maybe add a little bit, the kind of behavior that in a business setting would not be acceptable, in a courtroom setting would not be acceptable, but because it's not of such consequence, then you could be a little vague and leave out stuff that might be relevant. But to actually say blatantly false things, should we allow that? So that's a discussion. If you look, for example, the Meforshim and Chumash in last week's Parsha, 2 weeks ago at this point, Parsha's Vayera, so the Pasuk about the Kodesh Baruch Hu being Mishanes, you look at the Rechayim and others, and they seem very hesitant to say it's blatantly false. Sarah meant to say originally that we're both old, and God just emphasized that part, de-emphasized the Avram part. That the question of whether you could call these actual sheker or not, so there is a discussion in each context. And there are some who maintain that you should hold back from actual sheker, which seems to believe that there really is a values clash here, and just we're allowing a tilt on things because of shalom. Well, if you believe it's not necessarily sheker at all, so presumably you can say the sky is green, you can say whatever you want, that will get you to that point. And the Chofetz Chaim, just to mention the Chofetz Chaim and his sefer, you can understand why it comes up there. It's interesting, there is a whole discussion, by the way, if you're allowed to lie to fix Lashon Hara. So if you said something true about somebody that was an aveir of Lashon Hara, so now you have to figure out how to fix it. Are you allowed to lie to undo it? There's a whole discussion. So the Chofetz Chaim talks about Sheker of Nashon and Chofetz Chaim, and he says that l'chachilo, one should try to avoid a blatant, complete lie. But if there's no other way to keep the shalom, so ultimately all we have is the words of the Gemara, that it's mutl shafne shalom, and that shalom is such an imperative, so then presumably you should do that as well, even if ideally you would try to avoid that. Hi.
However, we define so episode of Adam and Sarah, wouldn't that, and we have to emulate Hashem, so wouldn't it therefore come out that whatever that case is, something we not mutter to do, it's a mitzvah?
Shalom. Could be. It could be that that's how we pass on. That's how some of that. That's presumably the thrust of the story. And that they have two opinions in the Gemara. So the first opinion is mutter, the second opinion is mitzvah, and then afakarsh baruch atz masa king, what's the thrust? Probably along those lines, saying that listen, this is more than a mitzvah, that it's also a halacha b'drachah. It's also something that we see that is even beyond the basic obligation. So in any event, so there are other nafkaminas of this question, I think, about whether it's a values clash or whether it's something that really is not an issue in terms of sheker. So, for example, so what about the Mishnah that Menachem mentioned a minute ago? So there's a Mishnah that's very famous. If you've ever been to a Jewish wedding, so you know that there is a phrase, Ketzav Merakdim Lufnei HaKala, Kala Nav HaChazuda. But if all you know is the wedding, so you haven't really seen the whole Mishnah. That the rest of the Mishnah goes on to tell you that it's actually a machlokas. That Beis Hillel's view is that you say Kalanda v'chazuda, and Beis Shammai's view is, look, maybe you're not so impressed. Maybe you don't really think Kalanda v'chazuda. And does the Torah not say Mitvar Sheker Tirchak? Which there is a whole discussion about, because this is different than what I mentioned a few minutes ago in terms of the Gemara in Shavuos, which puts it all in a Beis Din context. So apparently Beis Shammai doesn't think so. Apparently Beis Shammai sees it applicable even in the sky is green kind of context, because he's bringing it up. And then Hillel's response, there's a lot of literature about this, both the Lamdish literature and the Hashgacha literature. There's a lot written about this, because just what is the back and forth between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai here? So here Beis Hillel says what they say, and Beis Shammai says, Mitvar Sheker Tirchak, and then Beis Hillel responds, that halokeach mekach min hashok, if somebody buys something from the store and he's already bought it, it's already non-refundable. So, shakhen beina v'yivnen beina, what are you going to do? You're going to praise it, or you're going to say, oh, well, you got a terrible deal? So presumably he says, you're going to say something nice about it, you're going to make the person feel good about it. And then he goes on to say, the lo'olam mihedaito shaladam u'ruv mebriel. So a person should always get along with people, should always act in a way that people can function nicely with him. So what exactly is the back and forth? He's not really addressing the Sheker issue. He's saying something else. So there's a lot to be said about that whole back and forth, both halachically and hashkafically. It's a fascinating discussion. But the wedding bands paskin like Beis Hillel, and so does Shulchan Aruch, luckily. There is a whole discussion that the Chalkas Mechoke quotes the Tosfos that says that it means that you should kind of fudge things a little bit, like we said before. Don't say something so blatant. The problem is that Tosfos is really commenting on Beis Shammai. That's presumably Beis Shammai's view. Beis Shammai says Kala Kavoshi. So what does he mean? He hopefully does not mean that you're supposed to say ugly Kala, ugly Kala. That would be a terrible thing to say. So whether or not anyone ever interpreted that way, presumably that's not what Beis Shammai means. It means you say something you can get behind, you know, willing to go out with him, willing to go out. Something that's true, that's not Sheker. So that's presumably the difference between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. So one could ask, all right, so we pass him like Beis Hillel, the wedding band's passing like Beis Hillel, the never go further in the song for some reason. The Shulchan Aruch passing is like Beis Hillel. But what's Pshat and Beis Shammai? Beis Shammai is firmer than God? So we saw in the Gemara in Yevamos, there's no opinion that says that you can't lie with Bnei HaShammai. We have three opinions. Mutter, Mitzvah, and even HaKadosh Baruch Hu Atzmo Asakim. So what's Beis Shammai's problem? It's Beferish that it's at least Mutter.
You don't have to say anything.
Very good. So there is a suggestion along those lines. I saw this once in a sefer called Koch VeYitzchak, which I think is now available on HebrewBooks.org. The Koch VeYitzchak was Rav Yitzchak Sternhold, who was a rabbi in Baltimore. And he suggested very well along Menachem's lines, the way I like to phrase, not the way he says it, is that Beis Shammai lived a very long time ago before there were video cameras. So what's the nafkamina of that? It means that when the members of Beis Shammai went to a wedding, so you don't have somebody coming over with a video camera saying, "Nu, what do you think of the Kala?" So Beis Shammai would agree that if that would happen, if somebody would come with a video camera and say, "What do you think of the Kala?" and they're going to watch this at home a week from now, they're going to watch the video and they're going to see you saying, "Well, now that you mention it," so Beis Shammai, the food was great again. So unbelievable shmorg. So Beis Shammai would agree that you should say what you have to say. Of course, Beis Shammai agrees. Mutter l'shanos b'fnei Hashem. It's only that, as Menachem says along the lines of this explanation, that if nobody's coming to you with a video camera, so who says you have to go jump in the middle of the circle and start screaming Kan Lo v'chasudu if you don't believe it? If you believe it, matov v'manayim. But if you don't believe it, so then who's asking you to go do that? So if that's true, if that is the correct hesber of the machlokas, so it comes out to be paskin like Beis Hillel, means that even when you're not being asked, that even proactively, you want to take a preemptive measure in order to preserve or increase shalom, it should be mutter. So that's a very significant machlokas then, which could also be totally on these same two tzadim that we've been talking about, that maybe Beis Shammai sees this as a values clash, that we're weighing up emes and shalom, and we have to figure out how to accord them both proper respect. So if I don't have to sacrifice emes, I shouldn't. And Beis Hillel says there's no values clash here at all, that this is not a violation of Dvar Sheker Tirchak. So all I have is the desire to make shalom, and I don't really have any legitimate reason not to do it. So even if I'm not being asked, I might as well increase the shalom. It's still a kedai thing to do. So that's probably what that machlok is about. Hi.
Are they really advocating, though, that every person, it's ideal for them to look at the column and really comment on her physical beauty?
No, although the Gemara says that that's mutter in that context. I mean, the Gemara does say that for that purpose, that's a whole separate discussion. But the kavana, in order, the idea is, it's also fascinating, again, all these branch out into different discussions which you could spend forever on, but there's also the psychology of shalom that's being played into here. So where does shalom come into it? So if they're going to argue about whose job it is to wash the dishes, they're still going to argue about whose job it is to wash the dishes. So you see here that the more you hammer into people's minds the degree to which they should appreciate each other, the more that's kind of a firewall to invoke a term from last week, it's more this kind of a firewall against machlokas. So even though when they're going to argue about who should wash the dishes, they're going to argue about how to spend money or something like that, so you're not addressing that ki huzag, you're not doing anything to change that. But the reserve of appreciation they have for each other and the reserve of the feeling that they got a great deal here is going to have an impact there. Which is why, in the kid, the whole discussion, it's really a topic for this past week's parsha for Chayisara. But the whole sugya of Hachnasas Kala and of Simchas Chasim and Kala is the whole discussion. You know, the whole mitzvah of Simchas Chasim and Kala. So these people are very happy. And my mother always joked, why do we have to buy presents for the Chasim and Kala? They should buy presents for us. They're the ones who were at the maximum of their happiness, so let them buy presents for everyone else. Why should you have to buy presents for people who are the people who are the happiest people? So the whole idea of the mitzvah of Simchas Chasim and Kala is tied into this, that the idea that at that moment, there are many different hesberim, it's an interesting discussion in general, what the goal of Simchas Chasim and Kala is. But a part of it is that to create this maximal level of appreciation for each other once the deal is done. If the people are dating, so then you could say, listen, I think it's a good idea for you, it's not a good idea. I mean, that how that plays out is also a whole discussion in terms of what your proper role is. But okay, if the decision's not made yet, so then there's a role for honesty, so to speak. But if the decision is made and the wedding's already happened, and it's not going to change now, so then that's what Hillel says. Or Beis Hillel says, that you might as well praise it, because why not at that point? You're not going to have any toelis by saying anything else. So it seems that machlokas Beis Hillel Beis Shammai, if you say this hasber, is probably also revolving around this issue. Is there sheker involved? And we're trying to avoid sheker if we can. Or is there maybe no sheker involved here at all? That this is not a problem. To say kalla v'chasuda does not at all violate any issue of mitvar sheker tircha. It could be a few other nafkaminas, just to mention one or two others, that there is an interesting machlokas. They came out with a few years ago some volumes of the Chidushim of Rav Kook that are organized based on the Masechtas called the Tov Roi. I think Rabbi Chalap Shlita was involved in somehow bringing this project to exist. So in the Tov Roi in Ksubis, on that same Mishnah, so he discusses the following idea. He quotes an anonymous Talmud Chacham who wanted to say the following Chiddush, that we know the Rambam has this famous idea in Hilchos Deos, I think we spoke about it in the Parsha, in Parsha Vayera, the idea of the golden mean, that you should try to strive for the middle path in all things. And yet, we also have an idea that even though that's the ideal, but sometimes a person should go to the extreme if he's already at the wrong extreme. He's already at the opposite extreme. So the only way to correct things is to average out, is to go for a temporary period of time to the opposite extreme, and then ultimately you'll be back in the middle. So based on that, this anonymous Chacham said that this idea of Mutl Shanash Shalom, so who's that for? That's for the average person who tries to tell the truth most of the time, who tries to be honest in general, and is the kind of person to return and evade the two, perhaps. So that person, if he gets stuck in a situation once in a while, so he can be Mashanif Nashon. But let's say you have somebody who has a real issue with honesty. He's really not the kind of guy you would return and evade the two, even with a symptom. He just you'd suspect him of faking a symptom. He is somebody who you really don't trust, really has an issue with honesty. Yeah, he's really had a problem with it. So such a person has to work on himself, and therefore, based on this idea of the extremes, so he has to go to the opposite extreme. And that person shouldn't lie at all, even if they're shalom. So Rav Kook objected to this, and Rav Kook said that no, that you want to fix your problems, fix your middos, so do your self-improvement program on your own time. But here you have a mitzvah of shalom. So what right do you have to forfeit your mitzvah of shalom because you're working on your midas ha'emes? In other words, it seems like it's the same machlokas here. That according to the anonymous Chacham, there is an issue of sheker. And therefore, the average person has the right to make a cheshbon which one is going to win out MS or Shalom. But if you're already imbalanced, So then you should emphasize MS at the expense of Shom. And Rav Kook is saying, no, that it's not an issue of Sheker here. There's just an imperative to make peace. And therefore the fact that you have an issue to deal with in your own midos is not a license to abdicate that responsibility. This idea, not Moschachin, it could be supported by, there is a tshuva in the Tshuvas Yad Eliyahu, where he says something a little bit similar. He says that the idea of L'shanus v'nei Hashom, that's true if it comes up once in a while. But a person puts himself in a situation or finds himself in a situation where he's going to have to do this constantly, every day. His whole life is based on Sheker v'nei Hashom. So that's a problem, which seems to be the same kind of idea, that it's about balancing Emes and Shalom if they're in conflict with each other. And therefore, it's legitimate to occasionally choose Shalom over Emes. But if it means constantly throwing Emes to the wayside, so then that's going to be a problem. Although others might say no, that it's not an issue of Sheker any of those times, and therefore, however many times you have to do it, it's still okay. So there is I thought there was a comment to the Chassam Sofer in his Chidushim to Masach HaShabbos. More recently, I tried to look for it again, and for some reason, it's not there anymore. But I'm going to pretend that Mepnei Hashalom is still there. That somewhere, I thought the Chassam Sofer said the following in his Chidushim to Shabbos, that we know there is a din when it comes to tefillin, that one has to have a guf naki, that one is supposed to have a clean body when he's wearing tefillin. That's why we don't wear tefillin all the time, etc., etc. So the Chassam Sofer says that a clean body, it doesn't just mean physically clean, it means spiritually clean as well. So what does that mean practically? It means that a person shouldn't lie with tefillin on. He shouldn't be mashaker when he's wearing tefillin. So I shouldn't be mashaker anyway, even without tefillin. So what I thought he says was, no, even if Neha Shalom.
Unless you're wearing tefillin all day, I
discussed that once with somebody, that there's somebody, two ways to say, somebody comes to you and says, so listen, what do you think of my new suit? So you say, hold on a second, you take off the tefillin. Or you could say, I'm very makri not to speak sicha b'teil with tefillin on. And even if it's not true, so then it's totally on the chassam sofer whether you can say it or not. Or maybe it'll be mechuyif to say it. You know that story that they say about Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Chanuch Teller as a whole story about this. It's really a one-line story, but he has a whole chapter about it, that Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky had a practice of not eating a brachas on Pesach. So since that was not his family tradition, so why did he have this practice? So the story supposedly is that he was invited to someone's house on Pesach, and he wasn't so confident in the kasher, so he didn't want to insult the person. So he said, I don't eat kibrachs. And then because of MS, but then the rest of his life, he didn't eat kibrachs on Pesach. So that's probably more than you have to do. But, right, you could say that when it comes to tefillin, you want to be from about, it's interesting, it's a very related point. I saw recently a tshuva of Nassim Gestetner, who I mentioned on occasion. So he has a tshuva where it's just very related to this point, just why I bring it up, that if somebody, strictly speaking, so you know we're not supposed to speak during davening, we're not supposed to speak during Kriyas HaTorah or the like, but strictly speaking, one shouldn't speak Sicha B'Teila in a shul at all, or in a Beis Medrash at all. So the problem is, what happens about such people, such as the Bnei Yeshiva, who are in a Beis Medrash all day, and it's just really very hard to imagine they're never going to say a word of Sicha B'Teila. So he has a discussion about whether there's a heter or not in the Makom Tefila, Shalom B'Shas Tefila, to discuss things that are Sicha B'Teila. But then he says, okay, so let's say we can make a justification. So now if somebody wants to be from and wants to not speak Sicha B'Teila even under such a context, so should we say it's Yura, that they're showing off, that they're not going to speak Sicha B'Teila at all? So it says, no, that person wants to actually follow what the din is, so they're not going to call that Yura. Maybe we can defend the people who have a different approach, but they're going to actually to say so much that the person who's actually doing the Ikar HaDin is Balgaiva, so that far we're not going to go. So here too, a person wants to say that the din is, I can't talk Sicha B'Teila with Tulanam. Presumably that's not such a risk in terms of Sheker. But in any case, if the Chassam Sofer actually says what I thought at one time he said, So what is the basis of this idea? You see that apparently he believes that it's sheker. It's not that this is nothing. That this is a chefza shol sheker. It's sheker that's mutter. You know, sheker that is justified or required by the circumstance, but it doesn't change the fact that it's still sheker, which is offensive, and it's offensive to the tefillin, so therefore, even if you have to do this, don't do it with tefillin, which is an interesting idea. There are a few other such nafkaminas. We're really a little bit over time, so just mention one more interesting point, that there is a psak of the Sefer Chassidim. Sefer Chassidim, it's not clear whether or not this is really accepted the halacha. There are a couple of later tshuvas. Padua from London has a tshuva where he points out that this doesn't seem to be accepted the halacha. The tshuva is Cheshev Haifa. And a few others point out why this doesn't seem to be accepted the halacha. But it's interesting, it is quoted in the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham in Hochos Masa Man, I think it's Kuf Nun Vav, in Arachayim. So the Magen Avraham has a section where he puts in all the halachas that aren't elsewhere in the Shulchan Aruch. It's all under the heading of Hilchos Ma'as Ma'at, and that's where Lashon Hara is, that's where a bunch of other things are. So he discusses Hilchos Shanas from Hashem. And he quotes there the Sefer Chassidim. So Magen Avraham is a big step towards being accepted to Halacha, but still it's probably not so makubal this view, but it's interesting just to consider what it could mean. And here we live in Washington Heights, we work in Washington Heights. So you know very often people get approached in the street asking for money. So what's the normal minhag? Normal minhag is to say, I don't have any money. And even if it's not technically true, so the assumption seems to still be that it's mutter to say that, as opposed to saying, you know, it's interesting you should ask. I happen to have just come from the ATM, I have a ridiculous ton of money in my pocket, but I don't trust you, and I have no interest in giving it to you, so I'm going to decline. Right, so we assume that it's mutter of Ne'ah Shalom to say, I don't have any money. It doesn't really mean I don't have money to give you, whatever it is. But the assumption seems to be that that's mutter. So that's, you know, it depends how wise that is, depending on the nature of the interaction. But this seems to be a reasonable approach. So I don't have any, even if you have, to say mutter Shabbos Ne'ah Shalom. Sorry? So you must be radiating a certain vibe. But
I guess they look at me, they figure I'm just
too scary to approach. so many different ways to in any event, so the Sefer Chassidim says you're not allowed to say this, that you can't be Mishana in this case. Why not? So he says a chiddush, and I think this relates a little bit to the question you were asking earlier. He says a chiddush, and there's a whole discussion where does he get this chiddush from, because it's not clear A, where it comes from, and B, how it even stems with what we know already. But he says, this idea of the Shanas of Nehashom, that's about things that are in the past. But things that refer to the present or the future, that does not have to be Shanas of Nehashom. So, what does he mean? Where does he get this from? And people ask, what about the Kalam al-Bachasudah? What about Masechta? These are things in the present and the future. It doesn't seem to match the Gemara's. And also, even if it did match the Gemara's, where does he get it from? What's the mucker? So if you look, for example, in the Sefer Chassidim, so there are the fancy editions, the Moser of Kook Sefer Chassidim, where there are commentaries. There's a commentary from Reuven Margolius and from others. Reuven Margolius is a very fascinating machaber. Talk about him at a different time. He wrote the Margolius Hayam on Sanhedrin. He was a librarian, and he knew all kinds of fascinating svarim. So he has a commentary on the Sefer Chassidim. So some of them suggest that essentially Chazal had to interpret this din in a way that it was limited. Because theoretically, if you want to say it's a hatef ne'ashol, so if you're going to think broadly enough, you can make anything with ne'ashol. And so you could use this as a justification to lie under all circumstances. Well, maybe there's going to be a machlokas tomorrow if I don't say this now. So we had to assume that it's limited, so we say only about things in the past. And okay, so Masechta, well, that's also Mishum Anivus. Anivus is also going to be restrained. You don't have to worry. That's going to get out of hand. Okay, different Hezbeir. I think you could possibly say as follows. That maybe what the Sefer Hasidim is getting at is that he understands there really is a values clash here. But it's not that there's no Isser of Sheker. There really is Sheker. But Shalom could have weight. So since you're dealing with really the lesser of two evils, either start a fight or lie, so essentially maybe it's only applicable when there only are two choices. But if there's a third choice, better you should take the third choice. So essentially what the Sefer Hasidim might be saying is, in this scenario, you have choice, you could start a fight, you could say, yeah, I have so much money, it's crazy, but I'm not interested in giving any of it to you. Or you could lie, and you could say, I am totally penniless, and I will never have money, so don't ever come back to me again. Mm-hmm. Or you could have taken a vow of poverty. Or you could take a third option. What's the third option? You could give them the money. Now, that might not be a desirable third option, but theoretically, it's a third choice rather than lying or starting a fight. So perhaps his point is, when he talks about the past as opposed to the present or the future, what does he mean by that? Maybe what he means is that if the facts are set in stone, if you can't do anything about the Metzius, you're confronted with the Metzius. Kalanova Chasuda is such an example then. If you're confronted with the Metzius and your choice is either say something not true or start a fight, say something not true. But if you have any control over the Metzius, if there's anything you can do to choose a third option or to not get in the circumstance to begin with, so then that is preferable.
You can dodge the video camera. Dodge
right. If you can, or if you can get out of the situation in the first place somehow. So then you could, then that's preferable. So you could also say, and this is probably a good seam to the whole point, I'll be Derech HaDrush, that Rav Zalman Saratskin, who we often refer to in Al-Chumashir, the author of the Oznayim LaTorah. So the Oznayim LaTorah, he says that Midvar Sheker Tirchak, as we mentioned before, what's the language of Tirchak meant to convey? It's not a usual language of prohibition. So he says, which is similar to what Aaron said before, but a little bit of a different spin, that there are circumstances where you're going to have to be Mashana. There are circumstances where you have to lie. They have Shalom and the like, you're going to have to say something not true. So we can't say, never lie. That's not an appropriate statement. But what we can say is, tirchak, that l'chakhili, you should try to set up things that you will be far from the situation where you have to lie. So there are scenarios where it's legitimate for a person to lie. But ideally, you will try to do your best to make sure that those scenarios don't come up. You can't perfectly control, so there will be times when it comes up. But do the best you can to be memaid those circumstances. So that's probably a good rule of thumb in terms of the whole sugya. Maybe we'll just mention, I know that I'm keeping over time to mention one more point, that Rabbeinu Yonah has a interesting view. Rabbeinu Yonah in Shari Tshuva, so he lists 9 different types of sheker. If you look at it, it's a little hard. 2 of them really seem like they're the same. You have to figure out what exactly he means. But he says there are 9 different categories of sheker. And only one of them is subject to a heter of mutar l'shanos of Tanah Shalom. And this is also relevant to your question before, that basically talks about a sheker where you defraud somebody, a sheker where you benefit, a sheker which is meaningless, the sky is green, etc., etc. And he essentially says it's only mutar when there's no benefit whatsoever. So no benefit to you. You're not getting anything out of it. You're not hurting anyone else. It's basically the sky is green is going to make people happy, then say the sky is green. But if there's any benefit to you, if there's any money for sure, if there's any formality, all kinds of other scenarios he talks about, says that there's no head to l'shash and hasham, including what's say gnei v'stas. Gnei v'stas is a whole sugi very relevant to Bav Metzia. I'm sorry, I didn't help you. Everyone's okay, go another minute or two? That gnei v'stas is essentially, I say something that gets me false goodwill. So if I give you the impression that I'm doing you a favor when I'm really not doing you a favor or something like that, So now you feel positively towards me and I didn't really earn it. So that's an issue of grievous das. The Rabbeinu Yonah seems to say that's not much of Bnei Hashem. It's interesting, there is a tshuva in the Shuvah Shevet HaKahasi, the bells are dying, Shammai Kahas Gross, where he seems to disagree, because he discusses, let's say somebody's in charge of a fund for poor Talmidei Chachamim, I have a tzedakah fund for poor Torah scholars, and I have a certain Torah scholar I'd like to give it to, but I know that he's too proud to accept from tzedakah. So I'll say to him, listen, I'm a big fan of yours. I've enjoyed reading your svarim, so I'd like to give you a gift. And that he'll take. So am I allowed to do that? So he writes that what's the issue? The issue is Gnei Vistas. It's because now he's going to think I'm giving him the gift. It really didn't come from my pocket. It came from the tzedakah fund. So I don't really deserve the credit for giving him the money. I deserve the credit for directing the money to him, but it's not coming out of my pocket. But now I'm going to have to hide that fact because I'm saying it's mine, so it's like taking credit for a favor I'm not really doing. So says the Shevet HaKahasi, it's Gnei Vistas, and Gnei Vistas, a type of sheker, so mutl shas neshom, it's mutl. So you could say that way, but Rabbeinu Yonah would seem to not say that way. Rabbeinu Yonah would seem to say that Gnei Vistas is not permitted neshom, and therefore he would probably not endorse such a strategy. Okay, so we'll stop there and continue with the